The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
All right. Well, the first trial in Robert Mueller's Russia investigation is kicking off today. Today, they start picking the jury members for Paul Manafort. Paul Manafort, if you remember, was President Trump's former campaign chairman. He came in towards the very end, and then he was booted out. He was the first courtroom casualty in what feels like an investigation that has been going on since the 1700s. But there are three things that we have to talk about here on what's going on. The first is, what is Manafort being charged with? The second question is, what does Mueller hope to gain here? And the third one is, what is the real issue that everyone is going to miss? Okay, so let's start with number one. Manafort is being charged with bank and tax fraud. He has been a lobbyist and political consultant, I think, since the Jackson administration in 1830. He has worked with presidential campaigns, Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bob Dole. And he has also lobbied on behalf of, let's say, some questionable leaders. How's that? One of these leaders include the now deposed former president of the Ukraine. And that is where Manafort got caught up in the Mueller probe. Manafort has been really dirty and on the side of Russia in the Ukraine. The charges against Manafort allege that he made more than $60 million working in the Ukraine. Then he routed that cash through a shady bank in Cyprus and set up shell companies and disguised the money as loans received from these phony companies. Doing it this way helped him avoid U.S. taxes. Unfortunately, that's also highly illegal. So this is the case, in a nutshell, against him. So what does it have to do with President Trump? Nothing. Nothing. That's one of the problems. You can make the case that this trial doesn't even belong to the Mueller investigation. Does catching some dirty lobbyist laundering money have anything to do with the Trump campaign and the Russian collusion? Well, no. Absolutely not, unless Manafort, when he came on, helped or influenced and tried to get the GOP platform changed to make the sanctions go away on Russia. And it was a real shock to the GOP that was the only thing the Trump campaign asked for, was a change in the platform to go softer on Russia. Was that Manafort? Was Trump even involved? You have to assume that Manafort is found guilty because, he looks really, really guilty. He's been a bad guy long, long before he joined Donald Trump. Now, Mueller is probably hoping that Manafort's lips get loose during that time, but so far he hasn't said anything. If he has anything on the president, that's when he's going to get it, after he has been convicted. Manafort may actually have something Mueller can use against President Trump. I doubt it, but he might. But the real issue here is that I think a lot of people are going to miss what this trial is really all about. They're going to make this about Donald Trump and collusion and Russia. It isn't. This trial is about the dirty world of U.S. lobbying. This isn't a Republican or Democratic issue. This is a problem that crosses all aisles, all ideologies. There is real dirt in Washington, and people are getting very, very rich. And they're getting rich with money that comes from countries that really don't like us. They're all lining up together to feed at the same trough. U.S. political operatives are working in foreign countries, influencing their elections, and then they're back here at home working for different foreign countries to influence our own elections. It is out of control. And if the press has any kind of common sense, decency, and patriotism left in them, They will make sure that that remains the real issue that comes to light in the Manafort trial.
It's Tuesday, July 31st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Jason Buttrill is with us, and he is our chief researcher and foreign relations chief, and been watching Manafort, because we've been watching Russia for so long, long before Donald Trump probably even knew Manafort's name. Tell me a little bit about Manafort that we don't know, Jason.
So I think one of the biggest ties is, like, how are people tying him to Russia? Russia, Russian government officials, all that stuff, because that seems kind of murky.
But he is tied to Russian officials, is he not? I mean, isn't he? He is, you know, he was the lead guy for the president of the Ukraine, who's now been deposed, who is best friends with Vladimir Putin.
So he was Putin's basically handpicked person to be the president of Ukraine. So that was Putin's strategy for basically taking back and influencing Ukraine, was Yanukovych, the deposed president. And Manafort was the guy sent there basically to ensure that he was going to be elected. Mm-hmm. But it even goes beyond that. It goes to actual confidence of a confidants of Vladimir Putin. And this person was actually the reason why he ended up getting caught in all of this. But Manafort met up with a guy named Oleg Deripaska, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He used to be the richest man in Russia. He is an aluminum and industrialist oligarch in Russia. I think he had about $26 billion in fortune before the financial crash. Mm-hmm. After 2008, that went down to $5
billion. Wow.
He got destroyed. Lost a lot of influence in Russia, but slowly started bringing it back. So he's back on good terms with Putin. But this man met up with Manafort and showed him basically the blueprint for how you funnel dirty money into Cyprus banks. And that's how you're going to keep all this stuff off the radar. And that's how you're going to be doing a lot of this work for us in Ukraine. He's the one that said, yes, you create these shell companies, you have them write these phony loans and send them back to you. So this is all in the indictment. This all came through. When this first started coming out, it came out from what was called the Black Ledger, which was what they found in the former president of Ukraine's, mansion right after.
Right.
Not in his mansion, in the party headquarters.
Right.
And so they found this ledger, which showed all these dirty, like, cash payments that they were using to. It would actually say in right there in black and white, used to bribe the head of this party, you know, or use this. I mean, they were right. Not trying to hide it.
Right.
But Manafort's name was written as a recipient to a lot of these checks. So you can see it. It's not hidden. And the interesting thing is, this stuff is coming out. As this is coming out, Manafort should be laying low. He should be laying low. He should not be doing a thing. You would think that he would move to Cyprus, you know, or something like that, and just, you know,
enjoy your $60 million.
Enjoy it. Dye your hair.
Correct.
You know, grow a beard.
Or stop dyeing your hair.
But no, what does he do? He goes and jumps on the most highest profile job that he could in the entire world.
Why do you think he did that?
It makes no sense.
Right. I mean, I can't. That's the one part of this. You look at it because he was dirty. This is the reason why when Donald Trump brought him on to his campaign and he said, I've only got the best people around me. And we rang the bell and went, no, Manafort is a really bad, bad guy, because we knew all of this. And I just could not put it together on why Manafort would do this unless he was doing, you know, the bidding of somebody and trying to get Trump elected, because he knew that it would mean a lot more money to him.
Okay, so yeah, and Stu, we were talking about this yesterday, but I believe people like Manafort are just that arrogant. I don't think that he really I thought he had covered his tracks. He'd been taught by the best on how to hide this stuff. But then I don't think he did this the Trump job for free. But to men like Manafort, to people that have been in this business of political influence and this dirty lobbying world, money is not as valuable to them as the influence that they're going to gain in that position.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a couple other things too. He joins this campaign in a time where things are really bad, right? Mm-hmm. Lewandowski is on his way out. It does not look like they're going to win. So he joins this campaign at a time of where everyone believes they're going to lose the election.
Right.
So, I mean, he does not get this much scrutiny. He probably still gets trouble, but doesn't get this much scrutiny without Trump actually winning. And number two, if you think of the career arc of Manafort, who worked very closely with Roger Stone, is it's a constant struggle to be in the in crowd in D.C. and constantly being pushed out of it. That has been the Manafort Roger Stone career arc. They started out, you know, early on, they were close. They were one of the biggest lobbyist firms in D.C. Before that, they worked closely with people like Reagan as they were coming up. And they become so corrupt that they get pushed out of that inner circle. And this
that's corrupt. If you are so corrupt that the people in D.C. are saying you're too corrupt, that's pretty corrupt.
It's really corrupt. Yeah. And I think he sees this as his path back into that club.
Yeah.
You know, where there is tons of money and tons of influence. He doesn't necessarily need to get it from the campaign.
Right.
But, you know, he took at that time, that was a job that no one wanted. No one wanted to be involved with this campaign at that time. And now everyone's changed now. But at that point, it was tough to find someone as qualified as Manafort to run a delegate operation.
So now let's separate Donald Trump from this, because I think Donald Trump has a way of conflating everything, and it's wrong. And the press is conflating everything. Manafort is a separate issue. He was dirty before he joined Donald Trump. There's no evidence that he did anything dirty while he was with Donald Trump. It's everything he was doing before and all of his connections to Russia. So it has nothing to do with Donald Trump except one thing. And it was right after he joined the campaign. It was during the convention, and the GOP had to look at their platform. And one of the planks of the platform was to go after Russia and to be tough on sanctions. And the only thing the Trump administration asked for was that plank to be removed, that they were going to change their strategy on Russia and the Ukraine and everything else. That made absolutely no sense at the time. To me, it still doesn't make any sense, unless Paul Manafort, that's one of the reasons why he got into the campaign, was to try to steer it. Now, that doesn't mean that Donald Trump knew about it or anything else. But to me, that's the only connection to anything when it involved in the campaign. And that doesn't mean that Donald Trump was part of it.
And
any
again,
thoughts?
Well, and again, very, very hard to prove.
Yes.
Also, like, even if he does come out, let's say he's been tried, convicted, and they're waiting on his sentencing. And Mueller comes to him and says, all right, so now that, you know, this is happening, you know, you're either going away for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Or we're going to let you off on immunity or some kind of, you know, hand slap if you can prove that he was involved in some kind of collusion.
How do you prove it? Unless you have
email.
Yeah, unless you have email.
Or maybe another Cohen videotape or something.
Right.
Like that.
I mean,
who knows?
I mean, you don't have any way to prove that. And I don't think Cohen was thinking that way. You know, I don't think he was thinking about, hey, I'm going to get in trouble. And I mean, Cohen is probably the kind of guy that he's so slimy that when he's doing stuff for people, he wants to make sure I got a little insurance policy, you know, instead of I got an attorney or I've got it in a safe. He's just, I got it under my couch in my living room. I got a tape of you. But he seems to be the guy who makes sure that he has some protection in case things go wrong. I don't think Cohen's that guy. I think you're right. I think he is so arrogant. He's Leslie Moonves. I mean, all of these guys, what the hell are they doing? What are they doing? It's just about power, and they think they can get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, all the people that are working. Let's say they do have some kind of, let's say there's something that says Manafort was trying to lobby and say, let's ease some of these sanctions and then we'll, you know, change and change some of our policy towards Russia and all this stuff. Think about all the people that are involved at this point. You talked about, you know, this is a larger issue, you know, a Republican Democrat issue, of all the people that are mixed up in foreign lobbying. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. Just think about all the people that were working on the Magnitsky Act. There was Fusion GPS, who was working with the DNC, who was working with Hillary Clinton's campaign directly. Then there was also groups like the Podesta Group, who are also meeting with Fusion GPS. Mm-hmm. You've got Paul Manafort. All these people, like everyone is working on the same thing. It's like it doesn't really have anything to do with getting anyone elected, but they're all working on behalf of Russia. And in the Podesta Group's case, they didn't register as a foreign agent saying this. Manafort didn't.
Why didn't Podesta, as soon as that connection came out, what did he do? He shut his very successful firm down and just disappeared. Is anybody even looking into that?
We are on TV today. So you got that going on for you. But this is the clearest case, I think, that the media doesn't actually care about Russian collusion. We keep hearing these words. You know, Trump keeps saying there's no collusion. Well, this trial is about Russian collusion in many ways.
It's just
nothing
not
to do with the election.
Trump.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with Trump. It's got nothing to do with the election. It's Manafort has colluded seemingly with the Russians over a long period of time. It was just well before Trump was involved with Manafort. And if they actually cared about Russian influence, and if that was what this was about, the media would be obsessing about this trial.
Yeah,
but they don't care about it because it doesn't seem like the end game is taking Trump out.
Correct. It's not about it. They don't care about it because it doesn't take Trump out. But I think it goes a step further, as you'll see tonight on TV. It also includes the Democrats.
Yep.
I mean, the collusion with Russia, and not on an election, just to accomplish Russia's goals. The FBI has stated there is a mountain of evidence. OK, so how come we don't talk about any of that? Because a lot of it revolves around the Democratic Party. Thanks, Jason. We'll look for that update tonight at 5 o'clock on the Blaze TV. You don't want to miss it. Also, Kevin Williamson's going to be joining us tonight. We're going to spend a few minutes with him. And I think he's also on the news and why it matters tonight, isn't he?
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's, he's the guy who was so evil that The Atlantic hired him and then fired him, I think, 4 or 10 days later. He's got a lot to say tonight. All right. Simply Safe Home Security. Great security system. Fantastic protection. I have it in my house. Now, this is a company that had nothing. It was just five guys getting together and trying to build a better mousetrap, build a better security system. Well, they have. And they just got an evaluation of, I think, $1 billion. And that's because they are protecting now 2 million businesses and homes all around the nation. And they've just gotten started. Comprehensive protection for your home with round-the-clock professional monitoring and police dispatch. You get the protection against intruders and fires and leaks and, you know, busted pipes, all of it. It keeps working if your Wi-Fi is down, if somebody comes in and tries to smash the keypad, it still calls police. If the power is off, the system is incredibly easy to use. It's intuitive, and it takes about a minute to set up. With SimpliSafe, no contracts, no hidden fees. You own the system, and you're not going to believe the price. Really check it out. 24/7 monitoring is only $14.99 a month. That's it. No contracts. Take control of your life and your own security with SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com. Get 10% off now at SimpliSafeBeck.com. So it looks like Iran is starting to collapse. As soon as we pulled the deal, pulled away from the deal, they're monetary system began to collapse. It's going to end up looking like Venezuela, which is really good news.
In some ways, yes.
In some ways,
it's not going to be good for them. There, but I mean, long term, it probably is.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe,
I mean,
maybe
if this regime can be removed.
Correct. So we'll continue to watch that for you. Venezuela is melting down, but the good news is we aren't headed in that same direction.
No,
we told you yesterday that the new healthcare for all, the Medicare proposal that the left is starting to make, is only by their estimates how much
$32 trillion.
Okay, over a 10-year period. Now, just so you know, $32 trillion. Sure, it sounds like a lot, but there's a little more to that, and we're going to get into that We're going to get into that here in just a second. Stand by.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So before we move on, we have to take care of an argument here that Stu and I have been having for the last couple of days. We got a tweet in. It said, Glenn, my birthday is 9/18. How about an autographed copy of your new book? I'll post and boost the post that it's better than Bill O'Reilly's book. Unless, of course, Bill sends me an autographed copy, in which case I'll declare his better. Now, I mean, you had me. It was your birthday, and the birthday on the day your book, the book comes out. I'm thinking, you know, well, you give him a. And Stu says no.
No, that's stupid. You should not give him a book because it's his birthday on the same day your book is coming out.
Well, I just thought it would be nice.
Now, I am a little bit drawn in by a second part of his proposal, which is he will say our book is better than Bill O'Reilly's book.
Right.
Well, and he'll post it to his Twitter following. And that there's some real return there, unlike your socialist plan to just give him things for nothing.
Benji, welcome to the program. Yes, How are you,
Mr. Beck?
Well, very good. I mean, except we're torn. First of all, happy birthday soon. But Stu says that, you know, you really have to work on it. And I see the not so thinly veiled threat here about what you're going to say about Bill O'Reilly's book. But there's not a chance Bill O'Reilly's going to send you a free book. Not a chance.
Well, you know, I'm a capitalist. You're a capitalist. I may only have 64 Twitter followers, but they would run through a wall for me, Beck.
Right. So the 64, wait a minute. The 64 Twitter followers would run through a wall for you. Really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And you know how this would play out. If Bill outsells you, he would come out with his next book called Killing Beck's Book.
Oh, I know. So, I know. You don't have to. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself, Benji.
I'm a certified pharmacy technician and a preacher. I live in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So there's not a whole lot of meat on the bone there, but that's who I am.
Right. And you've been a subscriber to The Blaze for a long time?
Oh, yeah, since day one. It was GBTV.
Wow.
The first day it was available, I subscribed to it.
Wow. Now, I see here, because, you know, we did some checking into you. I see that you're having surgery on Friday. What are you having surgery for?
Yeah, this is actually a minor surgery for me. I had a major back surgery when I was 30. Mm-hmm. I had a heart attack at 35 and another heart surgery later. So this is actually a minor surgery by my standards. It's a sliding hiatal hernia and acid reflux surgery.
Wow, okay. You don't sound like a good investment. I mean, we only have till Friday where we can count on you. Mm. I mean, you know, sure, an acid reflux surgery doesn't sound bad, but you could go at any time just based on your record.
There's an easy way to solve this, I think, Glenn. Tell me if this sounds doable to you, Benji. First of all, part one, guarantee 64 book sales. Every one of your followers will purchase the book guaranteed. Number two, if something happens to you in this surgery, you take part of whatever you've saved in your life, and that goes to purchasing the rest of the 64 books, whatever hasn't been sold.
So if he dies?
Oh, yeah.
If he dies, okay. Then yes, the whatever inheritance was going to your kids or whatever goes to Glenn and his books.
Yeah, I mean, you can run the statistics on it, but I would guarantee that.
You'd guarantee that. Okay, well, I think giving one book away for 64 guaranteed book sales, that's I'll give you the money for a hamburger today if you'll pay me Tuesday. I think that always works out. Benji, hang on just a second. We'll get you a book. Thank you so much for listening and being a fan for so long. I wish you the best. You're not putting your affairs in order or anything for this surgery, are you?
Well, you know, look at Pat. I mean, his last broadcast could have been a few weeks ago. He could have went at any time.
Yeah. You're right.
And Jeffy's been around for, 500 years now? Come on.
Yeah, there's something wrong with Jeffy. I think he's made a pact with somebody. But, Benji, thank you so much. God bless you. And hang on the phone. We'll get your address and stuff, and I'll send you a book.
And we'll get you that book after we get the signed contract return in triplicate.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Man, that's why Stu's the executive producer, and I'm just the schlub. You know what I mean?
That's great. Congratulations. You've sold 64 books so far.
That's it. You got that. You know how much trouble I'm in with Bill O'Reilly? We have to come up with something. I'm open for options. We have to come up with something. His book is released the same day my book is released. His book is about the Nazis.
Nazi books always sell really well.
Always sell really well. Mm-hmm. Always
and
sell.
And his Killing series is one of the biggest successes of all time.
Yes. Yes.
And you're in trouble here.
Yes,
I'm
in trouble.
And you need people like Benji.
I cannot have Bill O'Reilly. It'll be right.
Oh, he's going to torture you constantly.
Oh my gosh, it'll be a nightmare. I don't care if it's one book sold more than his. Mm-hmm. It has to be. Otherwise, he is an uncontrollable monster.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm counting on you.
That's coming your way.
I'm counting on you. So come up with something. I don't know what it is. Maybe we have Hillary Clinton come in and buy a bunch of books, and they just keep it in a warehouse along with all of her books. I don't care what it is. I don't care what it is.
The good thing is, though, we're going to have a lot of extra money nationwide to spend on books because of Medicare for All.
Right.
It's going to save us a bunch of money.
Okay, well, it's actually, I don't think so. Here's the thing. It's 32, according to the Democratic estimates, it's $32 trillion over 10 years. But that's not really counting everything. That's just the basic foot in the door Medicaid for all. So if you need anything else, which you always do, the number is how much? When you add up all of it.
Well, and that's been kind of the back and forth with the numbers is important, and it's been tough to understand because if you remember, the first estimate came out at $32.6 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
And the left laughed that off, and they said there's no way it's going to cost that much. And then the other study from the left showed that it would only cost $32 trillion. So it was way less.
Right.
Now,
way less.
Now, if you look, however, at the actual study, there's a minor issue here in that basically what it does is assume that everyone gets Medicare, and then all of the doctors and hospitals
accept
the 30 to 40% lower payments that mm-hmm. Medicare provides,
and they're going to love
outside
that.
Of private insurance.
Yeah, they're going to love that.
There's a good argument to be made that they're not going to be that appreciative of that.
No. Mm-hmm. These are servants. They love to. Yeah, doctors. They will absolutely take that. A 40% pay cut. Hospitals. GE. 40% pay cut on their new products. Mm-hmm. They're all going to love it.
A lot of people really like that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people really like paying all of that. Now, what they're trying to spin this out, and it's an amazing magic trick in which they're trying to say that everyone's just going to accept this and it's going to work with no change in your service, which is obviously absurd.
If we fall for this, please, somebody put me in a capsule and just shoot me into space.
Yeah, it's that stupid, right? I mean, especially in a world where we are currently seeing what's happening in Venezuela.
Yes.
The fact that we have an ongoing example of these policies being played out, going on right now, with their 1,000,000% inflation rate and people eating dogs off the street because there's no food, if you're lucky, zoo animals disappearing because people are eating them. That's going on in the world right now. At the same time, this country is entertaining Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's an amazing world we live in. But when you look at the Medicare for All part, again, this is just healthcare for one country. They go through and the same study does the estimates of what really is going to happen if you try to do this. And the actual cost appears to be about $46 trillion, an additional $14 trillion in cost. Now, of course, that does not cover other things. For example, Medicare, if you're on Medicare, you know this, doesn't pay for every dime of your health care. It does not cover everything that you're paying. You likely have supplemental insurance on top of that, which is another cost.
You make this sound expensive, but $46 trillion. Mm-hmm. We're the richest country in the world.
I don't know if that's true.
Oh, absolutely it is. Do it without question.
I want to question it because we owe a lot of money.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay. $46 trillion. That is only as much as every dollar, every ruble, every yuan, every clamshell spent, earned, or made in the entire world for a year. Okay, that's $55 trillion. This is only 46. That leaves $9 trillion left.
And all you have to do with that $9 trillion is everything else in the United States, plus all things, including healthcare, around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get...
Now, this is 10 years compared to 1 year.
So, yeah.
But it's still $55 trillion.
So what is that? So, I mean, yeah. Come on.
Who's going to have a problem?
Come
it's
on.
One country. It's 4% of the population spending, you know, the entire GDP of the entire world on one thing that doesn't even cover all of it. I mean, that sounds reasonable to me.
Now, that sounds, I will say, some people will say, maybe we shouldn't spend $46 trillion. And look, let's be honest about it. In the $46 trillion estimate is, for example, a quote-unquote savings of over $1 trillion in administrative costs.
Holy cow.
Now, because government's going to be so efficient with this money that they're going to save trillions of dollars.
Yeah, no, on red tape?
Oh, on red tape and on lowering prices of different you know, medications and all of the things that are...
Sure.
Like, because we all know when someone says to you, you know what, this is totally free, spend whatever you want, you're going to totally monitor your spending and make sure you don't get any extra tests.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make sure you don't get anything.
You don't have to because the government will.
Right. Yeah. They eventually will have to because they're running out of money.
Yeah. Just ask Charlie Gard.
Yep.
You know, if it's not, you know, if it's not completely needed or we don't think there's a chance that you don't need it. You don't need it. So it's going to be good. And by the way, taxes now the highest amount we have ever raised is just over $3 trillion in a year. And it was just this last year. That's the highest income tax we have ever raised as a nation.
Mm.
Okay. We're already spending $4 trillion. So we're already $1 million more than we can raise. They want to add an additional 3.2. So if this is over 10 years and it's 3.2, it's 32 trillion, that means it's $3.2 trillion a year, thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Where we get that money? Does that mean we only have to double our taxes and we are still $1 trillion shy?
Lucky we're the richest country in the world or something.
Yeah.
But let me give you the case of two services here quickly.
Okay.
Remember a few years ago, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, I would say, you wanted to watch a specific episode of a TV show, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't available on demand. You would go to iTunes. Remember this?
Yes.
And you'd buy an episode for a couple bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pretty cool deal, right? It was something that was innovative.
It was great.
And then sort of Netflix took over, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you could pay $9.99 a month and watch as much as you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
When are you watching more TV? When did the term binge watching start? It started after you had the subscription and you could go as much as you want, right? You could watch as many shows as you want all in a row. If you had to purchase each individual episode like you did back in the day with iTunes or a $20 or $30 a month, you know, per series, you're not going to take chances on it. You're not going to go and get all the... This is what's happening with healthcare. It has happened over and over again. People don't care what the thing costs. And when the government, when it's your fundamental human right to have your healthcare costs paid for by those evil rich people, you think you're not upspending in these situations? Of course you are. It's going to be way more than $46 trillion. We're going to dream about the day where it only cost $46 trillion.
See, I disagree with you. Because you will run out of money.
There's no money.
What will happen is we will enter into the realm of the British healthcare system on day one.
And that's
there will not be enough money.
It's true. I mean, it dries up quickly. And then you have just a terrible healthcare system, which we've seen all around the world.
Yeah. It's almost like 8 years ago, somebody predicted all of this. And I remember it was you and 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 me. It's pretty amazing. Here it is.
And by the way, the people who designed Obamacare, who also predicted that this would eventually turn into exactly what we're talking about now, a single-payer system. And remember Barack Obama, early on in the campaign, talking about that's what he actually wanted. All these things were called hate speech because I guess he was black or something. I don't know how healthcare policy has anything to do with that. But that's what we were told at the time. And then here we are with them proposing exactly that and now dominating the conversation. Amazing.
Many people have a hard time picturing how to update their home, especially when it comes to window coverings or blinds, shade, shutters, drapes. They don't even try to make simple improvements that can have a dramatic effect on their home. Well, Blinds.com has a really cool section on the site where it's before and after pictures, and just to help you get your imagination going. Blinds.com is the easiest way to reimagine your home. Blinds and new custom blinds, shade, shutters, drapes from Blinds.com can make you feel like you've changed everything in your home without a huge expense. Just changing the window dressings is gigantic. And they'll guide you through the entire measure install process for free. You're going to get free samples. The shipping is free. Plus, you get free online design consultation. So people who really know what they're doing are going to be able to look at your room if you don't have the imagination to put it all together. And they're going to say, you know what? Try this. Try this. What do you think of this? And they'll show it to you. And it's so simple, and it's free. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window coverings for many reasons. Now through August 2nd, you can save up to an additional 50% off. Plus, take an additional 5% off site-wide when you use the promo code BECK. That's up to 50% off, plus an additional 5% off site-wide at Blinds.com, promo code BECK. That's promo code BECK at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions do apply. Sean Spicer, he was the press secretary for the president. He's going to make a lot of money on a new book called The Briefing. He's in with us next. We'll talk to Sean Spicer when we come back.
Glenn Beck. It's Tuesday, July 31st. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I am interested in history, and the older I get, the more interested I am in documenting the voices of the people who actually were there or made history. And one of the guys who played a very important role in history in the last few years has been Sean Spicer. He, of course, was the press secretary right off the bat for Donald Trump. He has a new book out called The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. Sean, are you a fan of Melissa McCarthy?
Good morning, Glenn.
How are you?
I am a fan.
You are?
She's a talented person that played a role.
Yeah.
Or several roles.
Right. I actually thought it was very funny. I thought she was very, very funny and kind of made you a little more likable in some ways, because it just kind of made the whole thing into, I don't know, something we could laugh about.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that means that we started.
Okay, well,
there's definitely the first one was not only funny, but I think well deserved. I think, you know, and again, she's playing a role, so
yeah,
it's not like, but I think the subsequent ones started to get a little personal and mean, which is, you know, a big boy, I can take it. It comes with the territory if you're going to take a job like that.
Let's start on the one where you just said, you know, the first one maybe was deserved. The explanation that you have in the book is fascinating to me about, you know, the inaugural numbers and you trying to figure out what your role is. Give me a real quick synopsis of that and what happened.
So here's the literally the 60-second version, obviously the big ones in the book. But the first thing I think people have to understand is the mindset. We've constantly been under attack as conservatives in general. But secondly, just our ground game wasn't good enough. Our data wasn't good enough. We were never good enough as Hillary was, no matter what we did, no matter what we won, no matter what we accomplished. The night before the inauguration, or the day of the inauguration, the press goes out and starts talking about how Martin Luther King's bust had been removed. Oops, not really. But then you can't unring that bell. So there's this mindset, and I think people need to understand that we are feeling under siege. The next morning, the president wakes up, and he starts looking at now footage, not of what he did signing executive orders, not about his agenda, but about like, oh, well, on this swath of land, there were less people than Obama. And I'm scrambling on a Saturday morning of a three-day weekend after an inaugural when I think two federal employees throughout the government were probably working. And I say that respectfully, but it's just my point is that we're trying to figure out how do we talk about that there actually was a ton of enthusiasm for this new president and his agenda. And I'm scrambling trying to find out anyone who can tell me about web traffic or anything and saying, okay, like, let's build a case that shows that, like, this is petty. Who cares how many people were standing in a particular area? Let's actually talk about the fact that people were streaming it live. They were watching it in different ways that they hadn't in the past. And yes, there was excitement and enthusiasm for this new president. And it was sort of like, you know, one of those MacGyvers where you're trying to take a bunch of random things and build some kind of bomb.
Yeah.
Where like, and I was literally, and I write in the book, and I'm pretty, I think, straightforward, that this was a day that I wish I could do over again. But the goal wasn't to deceive or do anything like that, as a lot of people are. It was trying to say, this is ridiculous. Look at all of these other ways that people are showing their excitement or interest.
So is the job of the press secretary, now in hindsight, is the job of the press secretary to defend the president and speak for the president, whether or not, you know, that's true or not, to just speak for him? Or is it to say, look, here's where the, you know, misperceptions are, or here's, you know, let me answer this. But when he says something like that, you just say, the president speaks for himself. I can't speak to that matter. Which is it?
Well, in many cases, I did say that, where I'd say, you know, the tweet speaks for itself. Or because, again, the question to your question is, what is the question? So in other words, if somebody says, what does the president believe? Then my job is to say the president believes or feels or what have you, the following. If they ask a fact of government, which is, you know, has this been confirmed or does 2 + 2 = 4? Then my job is to say, yes, 2 + 2 = 4, or, you know, or if it's not a true supposition, then to say that that's not true. But in the case of when the question revolves around what the president believes or what the president's views are on something, then it is strictly to basically say to the president privately, here's what they're asking. Here's what I'd recommend. How do you think, knowing here's my recommendation. He gives it back to you. And then ultimately, once the president or any principal for that matter makes a decision, you then say the individual believes or has the following views, full stop. Your job isn't to interpret, to say, they believe the following, although I don't agree with that. It's not about you. You're a spokesperson, correct, not an interpreter.
But they kind of want you to say, I don't agree with that, which that's not your job. That you should be fired if you say those things, right?
Sure. And in particular, I spent a few years in the Bush administration doing trade work. And so I would get these things all the time. Sean, don't you believe that that's ridiculous, whatever? And I'm like, look, I serve different principles. And my job is to privately and give them the counsel that I think that I can share with them, advice. But ultimately, it's to serve them. It's not, like, who cares whether I worked for somebody who didn't share the same views as someone else? That's by nature going to happen.
Tell me about the day that the Steele dossier came out. Here you have a president and BuzzFeed releases something that says, you know, about golden showers and all kinds of crazy stuff. And CNN calls you. Jake Tapper calls you. What was that day like? Take us through there.
That day goes down probably as the day when I realized that the Rubicon had shifted, that it was now about it wasn't about solid journalism. It was really going to be a gotcha game. And I talk about this in the book, but basically I get this call from Tapper and he says, hey, look, give me a call. I want to run something by you. And I'm starting to go back and forth with him. Hey, he says, I'm on air. I'll call you later. Finally, just shy of 5 o'clock, he says, look, we got this thing that we've got this dossier that we're going to print. We're aware of it. And it makes these accusations against the president. And I'm saying, whoa, hold on. Because the underlying document that they're talking about is classified. So in order for us to be able to refute it, we have to chase down this classified document, view it in a classified setting, and then be able to figure out what we can actually say based on whatever the contents were and what the inquiry specifically was. They're like, well, you have an hour. And so we are scurrying around, and one of the underlying things that it talks about, you know, in the one particular case, talked about where Michael Cohen was in some place, and I call Michael, and I talk about this in the book, and I said, do you have a passport? And he's like, of course I do. I have it on me. And I said, okay, I need you to drive back to Trump Tower, and I didn't tell him why. And he's like, are you kidding me? As you know from being up there, traffic in New York is not exactly.
Yeah, no, that's
and
not.
And so he comes back, and I open his passport. He's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I want to see if you're out of the country at any point during this alleged area. And the answer was no. And I'm saying BuzzFeed, CNN, you guys realize that like one of the charges here is completely refutable because I'm staring at the documentation that shows that he had never left the country during anywhere close to this time frame. And it was like, well, that's your response. And then they started making accusations about what we had been briefed in a classified briefing on, I think it was January 5th or 6th at Trump Tower. I sat in on that meeting and I have these reporters telling me what was briefed. And I said, that's just simply not true. I sat in the meeting. I watched Jim Comey turn to the president-elect and say, Mr. President, can I speak with you privately? The conversation lasted 60 seconds. He didn't show him the document. And I know that because they made a point of saying the document at this time is not ready to be viewed. It's not done. So we're going to just give you a heads up as to the general nature of what, that there is a document out there. And Tapper's and a bunch of these other guys are asserting that he was briefed on all these allegations and shown this document. It simply isn't true. And Glenn, here's the kicker. Since the book has come out, when Comey went on his book tour, he admits that he didn't brief him on the actual document. And Clapper says that Comey was the one who did it. And all of these guys fail to actually retract any part of their story because, well, you know, that's just not what they do.
Sean, did you find anyone that was in the mainstream media that you thought, okay, I really disagree, or they come to the wrong conclusions on this or that, but they are truly trying to get to the truth?
Yeah,
you don't have to name them.
Well, I mean, I do in the book, Len. I actually say that there are a bunch of these reporters, and I name like 10 of them, that I think I don't always agree with their stories. But every time I dealt with them, and sometimes it wasn't pleasant, believe me. But I always said, like, I thought about it after the fact in the current, based on what the current environment is. I said, okay, let's just do this. I may not like their reporting. I may disagree with it, but it's a free country. And every time that we had a tough story, they came and said, this is what we're reporting. This is what we think happened based on these sources. We would like your side. And I thought to myself, okay, in fairness, that if they are actually being pros and saying, look, we were given this information, here's what we want your side, I at least had to give them some credit for at least doing due diligence.
Sure.
More and more reporters now go, we have 8 sources, we're running with the following. And it's like, wait a second, those are heavy allegations. Can we have some time to refute it? It's amazing to me these days what constitutes breaking news. It's anything that they get needs to be refuted or questioned within, you know, a 60-minute time frame. And in many instances, that's just not possible. They'll send you an email and say, Glenn, I emailed you an hour ago. We're going with the story. I mean, not that we talked to you, not that we contacted you. They fire off an email and say, well, we sent you a note an hour ago. So in my case, many of the meetings that I went to were classified. You couldn't bring in electronic devices. Mm-hmm. So you get these notes, you know, after you walk out and you go, great, I have 10 minutes now to unpack this. And they're like, well, we're printing it. And you're going, what's the urgency of whatever? I mean, I get if there's a national security issue or something that's, you're trying to beat out 8 people on a story that's moving. But in many of these cases, it was just because they wanted to make sure that they got their story up, you know, as quick as possible without necessarily ensuring that they were right.
And they probably want to get, did you get the sense they wanted to get the story up before you had the ability to come up with a defense and actually understand the full story? Like it's not necessarily always even about beating their competitors. It's about getting the story up before you have a chance to defend it.
That's right. No, and I think more and more that's the case. And I was like, well, and part of it was they were like, well, we don't want to get tied up. Like, I think that what it is they felt like the longer it was out there, the more opportunity they were giving you to either deconstruct it, to push back and to fight it. And so they could say in their story, we reached out for comment and they didn't get back to us. And yet, for the reader, it looks like, oh, that sounds fair. But to anyone on the inside who knows what's going on, you're like, literally, you gave me 60 minutes to unpack a really complicated issue and provide any kind of alternative set of you know, scenarios or facts to say this is actually why this occurred. So in many cases, when you throw out an accusation, until you have time to talk to the people, to read the documents, to understand the policy at hand or where something stands in terms of the approval process, you can't just make a snap decision. You want to make sure you're getting it right. And so the press is like, well, guess what? You have 30 minutes, 60 minutes, whatever it is. And if you don't, we're going to publish it. Say that we asked for comment and you declined.
Sean, do we have you to the bottom of the hour?
Well, you have me as long as you want.
Okay. Great. So hang on the phone for just a second. We're talking to Sean Spicer, new book called The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. Coming up in just a second, more with Sean Spicer. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Goldline. They have a new product that they have just had minted by the Royal Canadian Mint. They call it the Four Nines Pure. It's a silver maple flex bar, and it is comprised of 19 individual bars of silver that make up 2 ounces of silver. Now, it's a really innovative design. It makes it possible for you to take it, and it looks like a credit card, and you can take it and you can break it apart like this, and then you'd have, let's say, I want to be able to barter for something, and I need a, you know, a quarter ounce of silver. Okay, this makes it much more reasonable if we ever go into a real bad situation, Venezuela. You see what's happening with Iran, because you'll have 1 20-ounce bars of silver, you'll have 5 1/10-ounce bars, and 4 1/4-ounce bars of silver. Each bar is legal tender, guaranteed for its weight and purity by the Royal Canadian Mint, and the only people that sell this are Goldline. So I want you to call Goldline, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com. Read their important information, but ask them specifically about the Maple Flex bar. This is a really great investment for your future, especially, you know, should things go crazy, and they don't seem to be getting any better. So I might want to check that out if I were you. Offered by Goldline now, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE, or goldline.com. Sean Spicer, the name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. I didn't exactly know how this interview was going to go, and Sean and I don't know each other. And I really appreciate his honesty and openness and willingness to just take it head on and share with us what it was like to be in the position that he was in under attack. Sean, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the kind words.
So, Sean, if I put myself in your shoes, there had to have been times to where, even if you didn't agree with what the president was doing or whatever people were saying, even if you didn't agree with him, there had to be times where the press was so disingenuous that it made you just want to just stand and just beat them back. And then at other times, there had to be times when you were so tired and the president would tweet or do something and you'd say, oh, dear God, I can't do this another day. You're doing this to me now, too. Why would you tweet that? Did you experience either one of those?
No, both.
Okay.
Look, it was an adaptive period of my life, meaning that for all of my 25 years of doing this kind of stuff, my job was to basically say to the people that I served, okay, here's the strategy, here are the tactics, here's the message. Do you have any edits? Do you have any thoughts? Let's tweak this. In the case of Trump, and so that had worked out well. In the case of Trump, his view was, I'm leading the charge, you're following. And that's a vastly different dynamic. And so, you know, you're right. You'd wake up and you'd be like, okay, I'm now getting asked about, you know, this tweet or this comment, and I have to call and say, you know, sir, what did you mean by this? How do you want me to? And, you know, it's not easy because, again, most politicians basically are like, hey, should I get peanut butter and jelly or just peanut butter? Like, every decision they want crafted and thought about. And Trump's sort of like, I'm charging the hill and you can follow. And as someone who spent a lifetime doing this, you realize that, like, the world that you used to live in and the way that you used to operate is not going to be the same. So, you know,
and in some ways I would think that was good. In other ways, you know, it would be, and I'm not talking about necessarily the policies where, you know, you find out, oh, he's firing him. He just fired, you know, not that kind of stuff. I mean, for instance, can you take me through the Access Hollywood day?
Yes, thank you for reliving that.
I'm sorry.
So here's the thing. And it's funny how, like, even now the little things get overlooked, but we're on our way to St. Louis debate, which was on a Sunday. So it's Friday afternoon. boarding a plane at Ronald Reagan Airport, and I'm on the phone with Jack Dorsey of Twitter. His digital team, my digital team, Twitter had just backed out of a deal because Hillary Clinton hadn't agreed to do the same kind of strategy buy thing that we're doing. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I have the, this is going to be amazing. We're going to blow up Twitter for their bias, and it's going to continue to reveal how these folks are, you know, favor the left, try to undermine the right. I've got them dead to rights. And I'm walking down the tarmac getting on this plane, which was going to be the last plane to St. Louis that had availability. And I look down and I get a text from our chief of staff that says, I need to talk ASAP. And I'm like, you know, you need to check your email. And I look down and there's a story that's now broken that says, you know, there's this tape. And I'm like, I'm going into my communicator crisis mode. I'm like, okay, but you know what? Like, that's a he said, she said, we know, you know, how, like, I'm just mentally trying to think, how do we immediately going to combat this thing? Mm-hmm. And then the next email goes, there's video. And I'm like, so I get on the phone with our chief of staff, and she's like, you need to get back to the RNC ASAP. And I was like, look, if I get off this plane, I don't make it to St. Louis. Like, and I can't, we can't do that. Like, my job is to help coordinate the thing. So I get on this plane with no Wi-Fi.
Okay, hang on. I've got to take a break here. So I don't mean to stretch out the agony for you, but we'll pick it up there with Sean Spicer. The name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President, when we come back.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Sean Spicer, the name of the book is The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President. He is, and I'm going to be straight up with you, almost didn't take this interview. And only because I thought I would hear the same stuff. I don't know, Sean. And somebody on my staff said, no, I think you should take him because I think there's more than what you're seeing. And I'm glad I did. And in fact, we were just in the break and I'd like to invite you down, Sean. I'd like to spend a couple of hours because I think there is much, much more to you than what you're ever going to be, allowed to show. And we'll get into that later. But anyway,
First, let me just say thank you, Glenn. That means a lot. The funny part is just so you do know, we have met. Here's why, though, because you're a busy man. I was running coordinating Fleet Week in New York. We had a bunch.
Oh my gosh.
All they wanted to do was to meet Glenn Beck.
I remember you now.
Not only that, but you arranged dinner for them. You brought it all up and you said, I don't just want them to come to my show. I want to take care of these sailors when they come in for Fleet Week. And it was off camera. Mm. It was Glenn Beck doing this because he wanted to, not because he needed to, not to get some kind of PR blitz out of it. And I will never forget that because that's the point. You didn't know who I was. You didn't know who these sailors were. But you made that day and that evening so special for those folks that were up there for Fleet Week. And I will never forget that.
Wow.
Because that's the point. You don't know people. You have a ton of listeners and supporters, and you do the right thing for them. And that's why I was so grateful to have you to be on your show today, because I know that even when the camera's off, when the radio's mics are gone, that you do the right thing for so many people. And I appreciate that.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you if you would come down and spend a couple of hours with me and do a different kind of interview, because I think you have a lot to share, and really none of it about, you know, Trump. Please consider that.
I would. Thank you.
So, Sean, we left you on the tarmac trying to get to St. Louis. The Access Hollywood tape just broke. And you're told you got to come back. And you say, if I don't get on this plane. So you're now on a plane without Wi-Fi.
Yeah, land in St. Louis, you know, turn the phone back on, and it's literally like text message galore, email, like, what's your comment on this? Is he dropping out? What's going to happen? And, you know, I'm calling back. My job at that time was to help coordinate the logistics for the general election debates. And it is literally duct taping the organization together right then. It was, oh, so-and-so's flight is no longer, I mean, people were bailing like you wouldn't believe. suddenly, you know, a lot of people didn't get on planes, and they were like, I can't make it to St. Louis. Suddenly, my mother just got sick. And that may be the biggest crisis situation I have faced as a communicator, say some of the stuff at the White House. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if this is any other candidate, here's what you do. You get out there, you do this, you apologize. And what happened that weekend, and I write, I think, fairly extensively in the book about this. Like, I mean, at one point we're getting ready for the debate and he's clearly on. And I'm thinking to myself, how do you do this? You've just been accused, not just accused of it, it's on video. And Bannon organizes this thing. He says, we're fighting back. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And no one, all of a sudden, they're like, there's a press conference about to start. And I'm like, with who? They're like, Trump. And I'm like, we're 20 or whatever, an hour before a debate. What do you mean we're having a press conference? He's like, yeah, Bannon brought all of the Clinton accusers to the debate secretly, and then they're going to speak, and then he's going to sit them in the debate. I'm going, oh my God, like what is going on here? And it was just another example of Trump fighting back in a way that I've never, and people can agree with him or disagree with him. But if you just stop for a second and analyze how he has plowed through some of these events in ways that I would never have recommended to any client, It's mind-boggling to me, because if someone said to me today, I saw Trump do this, I'm going to do the same thing, I would literally just stop and try to restrain them and say, please don't do this, because I don't think anyone else can get away with
it. I don't think so either.
It is not some kind of tactic that people can adapt to. He truly is a unique candidate and now president.
Yeah, it's just him. That's the way he is. And you can't copy it.
That's right.
So, Sean, you started the interview saying, you didn't like the personal attacks from SNL. At first it was funny, and then it started getting very personal. In your book, you talk a little bit about how you were working late at night at the most secure place on Earth, but your family wasn't. Tell me about what your family went through.
Someone put my house up for sale one day. My wife calls me and says, hey, I just got to give you a heads up. One of the neighbors called. Apparently our house is now listed for sale on Zillow. And I'm like, how much are they asking? before we discuss this. And they had sort of, let's just put it, not highlighted the positive aspects of living in our house, as opposed to, it was very focused on the current occupant being me.
Yeah.
And what made it difficult, Glenn, is I don't think I ever anticipated the level of scrutiny and intensity that I would get. But my wife and my kids, that's another thing. And I still think that today, where I watch some of the things that happen to other people's families and say, look, I don't think it's right, some of the attacks that I get. But I've kind of put myself in that role. You, as a host, put yourself out there. But when someone starts going after your kids or your family or making threats against them or driving by our house and making, it's like that's where I think you cross a line. I tell people all the time, I get the question, did you feel safe? And I'm like, listen, my office is 25 feet from the Oval Office. If you can get to me, we have a big, big problem.
right.
But my wife and my kids are just hanging out there in public, and they didn't ask for this. And that's where I was worried, because I'd leave at just after 5 in the morning, get home sometimes as late as 10 or 11 o'clock. And it's amazing. This is not a pity party. But the amount of stuff that we had to do lifestyle wise to adapt to this job, the amount of money that we put into security and other stuff was ridiculous. I thought, okay, I'm serving my country. This is great. And now, I've got people running around saying, okay, you need to remove these bushes because people could hide behind them. You need to put this kind of security. And it's like, are you kidding? This is what I'm doing to serve my country.
Right. So, Sean, I don't know if you can vocalize this yet, but the media is media history, the elites that are the ones who write history. They're not going to let you back into polite society. No matter what you do, you come on an award show and you mock yourself. It doesn't matter. They're not going to let you in to polite society again, if you will. They're going to punish you, you know, for being the mouth and the face of Donald Trump. How do you view that? How are you dealing with that?
A, I think you're right. B, I don't care. I know what I believe. I know why I believe it.
Hang on just a sec. Wait. I say that a lot, too. So I understand. I understand the real feeling behind that, because I say that, too, and I don't. But you do. There is a part of you that really does.
You're right, in the sense that this. I don't like when I meet a group of people and people start, they assume very negative things about me or ascribe traits that in my worst dreams I would wish were never said. It hurts. There is no question. But at the end of the day, Glenn, I look at this and say, here's the thing. I'm going to live my life. If I can say that I've been a good person, that I've treated people well, that I know who I am, and I don't, because I get your point, which is that we care, but we say we don't. And I don't know how, and I'm still new at this, if you will, right? All of this happened. I toiled in obscurity as a strategist for 25 years, but I do not appreciate people thinking that I am a bad person. Okay. But I don't know how else to deal with it. And you probably could give me some good advice, because there are people out there in the elite on the left that control so much that, you know, literally, you know, a woman last night in the hotel who is a fairly high up executive saw me checking in, walked over and just said, I can't believe you would ever work for a man like that. It doesn't say much about you. And I was like, that to me is very hurtful. Like, excuse me, I'm serving my country. This man was elected president of the United States. And for you to walk up and say, because I did that job, I am therefore a bad person, is not something that I want to hear, that I like hearing.
And what does it say about her that with only the information that she has from the media and public, that she felt she had the right to judge you?
That's what I don't get. And the funny thing is, clearly she was coming from the left. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't like a lot of things that that some Democrats do, but I don't hold every supporter responsible for every bad act that every elected Democrat does. It's amazing to me, but to get back to the nut of your question, I just don't know how else to operate, which is the way I look at the world right now is when I walk down the street, half of the people probably don't like me. I don't know what, I mean, I wrote the book for a reason. Part of it was I was tired of going out and listening to people tell me what I felt because they had read some story in Politico. And I thought, you know what? Screw it. This is at least the thing. If you read the book and you say, I still don't like you, then fine. But I gave you an opportunity to learn a little bit more about who I am, you know, what my values are. And if you say, I still don't like you, okay, I don't like that. I wish I had 100% approval rating. It's not going to happen. I don't know how. And I think it speaks to your point, much larger issues in society, the idea that the left in particular goes out and judges people by saying, okay, because you support these things or because you're a conservative or you stand up for this cause, you are fill in the blank, a, you know, racist, sexist, misogynist, whatever it is, it is, and that's okay, is just unbelievably wrong.
Sean Spicer, great to talk to you. Really great
to
talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I look forward to coming down and visiting with you.
Thank you very much. The name of the book is called The Briefing, Politics, the Press, and the President.
Really interesting.
I love being surprised. I love it. This is the definition of honest questions. You don't get this from the press. I went in expecting very little, expecting to probably spend 10 minutes with him not being able to really get into anything with him and asked him questions, and he changed my mind. That should be what the press does. You can come in with your own thoughts, but ask the questions and allow the person to change your mind about them. I like him. I can't wait to have him come down. And I do remember him now. He was a naval. I don't remember what he was doing, but he was working for the Navy. I think he was in uniform even at the time, maybe.
This is the fun thing about working with Glenn is he's met everybody but remembers nobody. So every time he thinks he's meeting somebody new, he's already met them like 12 times in really important moments in their lives.
So bad. So bad. But I do remember remember him, and I remember liking him because we did set that up and it was just all off the record, and he was so genuine and so nice.
Yeah, he was always always well liked in Washington.
Yeah.
And he's been through quite the journey, so that'll be a really interesting conversation.
Owning a home has never been easier, and it continues to be an incredible investment. Whether you're buying your first home, your next home, or even an investment home, let American Financing customize the right loan program for you. They're going to get a pre-approval letter fast, so you're going to know exactly how much you're going to qualify for, and you can expect faster loan processing thanks to the house in-house underwriting and decision making. So they're not selling this off to somebody else. They do it all themselves, and they employ salary-based mortgage consultants, so they don't work for commission from the big banks. That's how you find the right loan for you. Now, they have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, over 1,800 Google reviews, and you're going to be able to find out. Just go on and read their reviews if you need to find out more, but I'm telling you, I've known these people for over 10 years, and they are really, really great. AmericanFinancing.net. AmericanFinancing.net. Call them at 800-906-2440. 800-906-2440. You need a home loan or refi? AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
I love it when I'm shocked. Just love it. Love it when I learn something new. Sean Spicer, the name of the book is The Briefing. Sean was just on with us, and I can't wait to bring him back down here. I just want to sit him in this room for 2 hours with no commercials, and we're just going to talk. And then we'll just, take it and let you listen in and play the best parts on radio. But I think he has a lot to say, and not about politics.
Yeah.
Just about the way the system is working.
And just how to deal with that as a human being.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, it was interesting to me to hear him talk about, like, Access Hollywood's going down. And Donald Trump's throwing a press conference and he's hearing about it, like, minutes before it's happening. Like, I mean, this must have been it must have been crazy to go
chaos.
Through that time.
Just chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos. Back in just a second.
Glenn Beck.
Okay, communism, socialism, Marxism. For anybody who has studied history, those ideologies are clearly toxic. They are bloody and they are fatal. Socialism, Venezuela, how is that not toxic, bloody, and fatal? Now, there are, there's a crop of young romantics who love wearing Che t-shirts to Starbucks, with tattoos of his grizzled, murderous face donned with a halo like some Spanish-speaking John Lennon. But he wasn't. He was a ruthless killer. They swoon at the mention of Marxism, which is largely a consequence of the fanciful rhetoric that they've been fed, by the beret-clutching professors who, in reality, teach about the merits of Marxism while enjoying the benefits of capitalism. They have never experienced the depravity of Marxism, socialism. Stephen Hicks, he's written a book everybody should read. It's called Explaining Postmodernism. He wrote, "Socialism is the historic loser. And if socialists know that, they would hate that fact. They would hate the winners for having won. And they would hate themselves for having picked the losing side. Hate as a chronic condition leads to the urge to destroy," end quote. Now, part of the postmodernist fight against this reality is rhetoric. Essentially lies. And they'll lie to do anything they have to enforce their system. Now, I want you to hear this. Know that this isn't liberalism. This is not progressivism. This is postmodernism, and it is extremely important that you understand, because of what postmodernist goals are, which is complete destruction of the system that created the West, which is reason and enlightenment and science, clear thinking, truth. Okay, so this comes from Huffington Post. Now listen to this. Relax, boomers. Socialism is good now. That's the headline. In this story, they use the strategic lying devices as a way to coax people into believing the sickening lie, the false idea that socialism is somehow good. It's right, and it's not just possible, but it's good. Now, the article is not posted in the opinion section. In other words, they consider it to be actual fact and news. Now, check out this gem, which will likely end up in your writing manuals of your local journalism school as an example of good writing. Quote, the baby boomers are the worst American generation since Reconstruction. The baby boomers are the worst American generation since Reconstruction, but they had many reasons to turn out this way. The boomers were raised in a political culture dominated by madmen. Their minds were warped at an early age. For decades, boomers saw the term socialism deployed not to denote a set of economic policies, but to conjure a vague foreign horror. A vague foreign horror? No, it wasn't vague. It was quite clear. Accustomed to this nomenclature, boomers have reacted with fright or at least confusion to the terminology of today's American left, which has embraced now the word socialist and that label more widely than any domestic political movement in living history. But the boomers need to relax because socialism is good now. Now, what follows is a puzzling, nearly unintelligible rant about the merits of socialism. And the good part of me wants to sit down with this author and sit down and have dinner and chat about all of this until we come to some sort of understanding. But then I think, and I don't know if this is a worse part of me, but mostly I just want to buy this person a ticket for a vacation in Venezuela.
It's Tuesday, July 31st.
And I have been wanting,
this is the Glenn Beck Program.
Been wanting to talk about this all day, and if I don't do it now, I'm going to forget, and it's really important. Mercury One and our partners are en route to California right now to provide aid and relief to the first responders and those affected by the fires. As of Monday morning, the fire is only 17% contained and has burned over 95,000 acres of land in the Redding, California community, with more than 550 structures that have been burned. We have Operation Barbecue Relief, which will feed 40 to 60,000 meals in the next 10 days to the first responders and anybody else who's in need. A donation of $20 can feed five people. $20. City Impact, sending relief to support those who have been evacuated and have lost their homes. We have Team Rubicon on standby. They are going to respond as soon as the fire is contained, and we really need your help. Could you please go to mercuryone.org and make a donation, mercuryone.org, and let's help our friends out in California who have lost their homes and so much more. California, we are, you are in our thoughts and prayers. Okay. Yesterday, Chris Pratt came out with a letter that all of the Guardians of the Galaxy signed. And it was an open letter, and it was to all the fans and friends of Guardians of the Galaxy. And it was about James Gunn. Stu, in 45 seconds, can you give me the rundown of what happened to James Gunn?
Yeah, I mean, after he had participated in a little bit of
lynch mob,
a little bit of a lynch mob on Ben Shapiro, Mark Duplass, two people we really like, by the way. He had
people went back, found out his old tweets. What did he say back in the day? And dug up some jokes that were intentionally offensive and
very dark,
very dark humor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And someone on kind of on the alt right decided to make this sort of his big cause and act as if he believed he was really a pedophile or something, because the jokes, some of them were joking about that. And of course, this is a Disney production, right? And Disney does not want to be involved in pedophilia jokes. So they fired him. And he no longer is going to direct the Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3.
So the other part of this is that what the alt-right, and it wasn't the right, it was the alt-right that did this. They went and, interestingly enough, left out the fact that he, in 2012, just on self-reflection, went back to all the jokes and all the things that he had written on Twitter and said, you know, I've just reread all of this stuff that I've done, and I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the provocateur. And I apologize to anybody who has been offended by this, and I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
And he spent the years after 2012 proving it by not being that guy.
Right. And you mentioned it there, and it's important to focus on, and that it was not a moment of the mob came after
caught
him and he had to apologize, right? He, on his own, decided, you know what, I want to be a different person. And he, decided to implement change and then successfully implemented it for, 6 years?
Yeah. So he's fired, and Chris Pratt and the rest of the cast come out with this. To our friends and fans, we fully support James Gunn. We're shocked by his abrupt firing last week and have intentionally waited these 10 days to respond in order to think, pray, listen, and discuss. In that time, we've been encouraged by the outpouring of support from fans and members of the media who wish to see James reinstated as director of Volume 3. As well as discouraged by those so easily duped into believing the many outlandish conspiracy theories surrounding him. Being in the Guardian Galaxy's movies has been a great honor for each of us, and we cannot let this moment pass without expressing our love, support, and gratitude for James. We are not here to defend his jokes of many years ago, but to share our experience of having spent many years together in the making of Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. The character he has shown in the wake of his firing is consistent with the man that he is on the set every day, and his apology now and from years ago when addressing these remarks, we believe, is from the heart, a heart we know, trust, and love. In casting each of us to help him tell the story of misfits who find redemption, he changed our lives forever. We believe the theme of redemption has never been more relevant than now. Each of us looks forward to working with our friends James again. There is little due process in the court of public opinion, and James is likely not the last good person to be put on trial. Given the growing political divide in this country, it is safe to say instances like this will continue, although we hope Americans from across the political spectrum can ease up on the character assassinations and stop weaponizing mob mentality. So yesterday, I saw this post and immediately saw that Chris Pratt is now being called a protector of pedophilia. Chris Pratt. Now, I don't know Chris Pratt, and I don't know James Gunn, but I have watched Chris Pratt in public just as much as you have. I have praised Chris Pratt just recently for being one of the bravest Christians I have seen with what he did at MTV. That takes real character and commitment. And so here is Chris Pratt last week defending James Gunn and just using Bible scripture of let's be slow to anger and judgment, please. Now he's just saying there's no due process here. You can't just lodge a bunch of stuff and say, oh, well, he's this, and then get fired for it, and then that's the end of it. And he's right. I have supported not his jokes, but I have supported the end of this mob mentality. I was defending Ben Shapiro, and I was defending, what's his name, who started it?
Mark Duplass.
Mark Duplass. Here's Mark Duplass, a guy on the left, hard left, who recommended to people on the left, listen to Ben Shapiro. You should listen to him. What did people on the left do? Well, they attacked him, and it was mob mentality. And that got Mark Duplass to back off. Now, that's bad. That's bad. And I have exchanged emails with Mark. And he is, while he had a moment of weakness, I don't believe he is going to continue to be weak. It was mobs that surrounded him. He just had never seen it before. So, James. James Gunn now gets, because of an alt-right guy, remember, the alt-right wants chaos. What does he do? Well, he says this, and within a, you know, within 12 hours, this guy goes from a joke writer to a pedophile. And it's midnight on Saturday, and I start to write something. My wife says, what are you doing? I said, I can't stand by with this. This is craziness what's happening. She said, please, honey, don't get involved. It's only going to get you in trouble. And that was the final straw. That's when I knew. That's when I looked at her and I smiled and said, well, now I have to. Not to stand is to stand. Not to speak is to speak. You have to speak up. First, they came for the trade unionists. James Gunn is not a friend of mine. James Gunn, I don't care who makes the next movie. But James Gunn is a human being. Just like Ben Shapiro is a human being. And just like I said to James Gunn when I was defending Ben Shapiro to him, stop it. That's not who Ben is. You don't know him. I say the same thing. We don't know James Gunn. And to throw around pedophile is really pretty harsh. Is there a worse title?
Seems to be the first line of attack now. Anyone, right. Whether you're making pizzas or you made a joke, or so, it's like a greeting online.
It's
a pedophile is now the new hello.
Right. And so what happened is for 3 days after defending him, I'm becoming a pedophile supporter. Excuse me, I've raised more money in this country than probably any other single individual to stop that. We currently have people all over the world to stop that. Then Chris Pratt, he gets the same treatment. This is the time that I talked about, and I said, there's going to be a time and you're going to and it's going to feel good and everybody's going to be running the other direction. And you have to stop and say, don't do it. Don't go that way. Don't go that way. And it's going to be really hard. And let me show you, after I tweeted support for Chris Pratt yesterday, let me show you something that NBC came out with. And the way they tried to explain what happened to James Gunn, which just made it so much harder for me to continue to say, no, that's not right. Because wait until you hear how the left and NBC hears this and how they're spinning this. And we have a choice to be made. We can either hit back and engage in destruction and chaos in hopes that what? We win and the other side, what happens to them? They're not going to listen. They're not going to change. Their hearts are going to be harder. Or we do the tough work right now and we start to stand together on things and say, look, you know what? We could disagree on everything, but this is a basic human principle. We are not a lynch mob, and hope that in time that hearts will be changed. I want to show you what happened yesterday and show you exactly how the other side is spinning things and how wrong it is. And we must recognize that, but we can use that as an example and say, why? Why would you do this? And try to reach to the people, not the diehards that are never going to get it, but reach to the people who are our neighbors or live down the street or are very much like you and are tired of this. Those are the people that we should be targeting to understand, not the big elites who have an agenda and will never change. Middle of the night, you're tossing and turning. You're not sleeping. You're drenched. You're covered in sweat. Well, you could run the AC. You could run the fan all night to keep cool. Good luck with that. Or you get rid of that heat-trapping mattress and sleep cool and comfortable like I do with a Casper mattress. Casper mattresses use premium foams that relieve pressure and help align your body so you can fall asleep feeling comfortable and wake up feeling refreshed. Thanks to the breathable material, you are guaranteed to sleep all night, all summer long. And it ships for free in a little teeny box. So you just open it up and this giant mattress springs out and it's unbelievable. And then you try it out for 100 nights. If you don't like it at any point, you just call them up and they will come and pick up the mattress and return 100% of your money. So it's risk-free 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll come and get it. Casper. Get a good night's sleep with Casper. Try yours for 100 nights free with shipping and returns being free. It's Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. $50 off the purchase of your mattress right now with the promo code Beck at Casper.com. That's Casper.com. Promo code Beck. All right. I want to play this. Believe me, it's going to be hard to listen to. This is the way NBC is spinning now what happened with James Gunn, who was involved in taking down Ben Shapiro. Now, listen.
We're at this really interesting place now where tweets can be weaponized against us for very explicitly political purposes. And the pernicious thing about the way the alt-right used Gunn's tweets to get him fired and exact this kind of punitive measure against somebody who, by all accounts, did not exhibit that behavior in the future and had worked to rectify it, is really troubling. For the most part, I think you could argue that on the left, it is at least born of a desire to improve the discourse and the acceptability of certain people, certain marginalized groups, and diminishing hate speech.
Holy cow.
Whereas with Cernovich and people on the alt-right, they take those same principles and act on them in bad faith.
Holy cow. There's a lot to say here. Well, first of all, for the most part, the people on the left are only targeting people to diminish their influence because of the hate speech, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you'd have to throw out all of postmodernist philosophy, and you would have to throw out everything you know about media matters to even come close to that being true. But that's not where it ends. We'll get to that, and also something else from The View that goes along with this point. And then you have a decision to make. How are you going to react? Also, Pat Gray coming up.
When you walk into a car dealership, you can't choose who's necessarily going to be selling you the car. Normally, just whoever walks up to you at the beginning is the person you deal with. You don't have to do that with real estate agents. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a website with over 1,200 agents all around America that are rigorously qualified. They have their marketing plans looked over, their experience, their character, and the results they get for their clients. That's how they figure out who gets it through the process. It's not an easy process for these agents to go through. But they're going through it because they believe they're going to be dealing with good people like you. If you're in this audience and you have the same values that we talk about every day, you know, that's somebody I know. I like to work with people who share my values, and that's why they're on this website, and that's why I think you should go there. If you go to realestateagentsitrust.com, you're going to find someone who's a fan of the show, who wants to be involved, who wants your business, and is going to earn it. If you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, or if you're looking to buy, go to realestateagentsitrust.com, and you'll be introduced to the best agent in your town. realestateagentsitrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We're at this really interesting place now where tweets can be weaponized against us for very explicitly political purposes.
Yes.
And the pernicious thing about the way the alt-right used Gunn's tweets to get him fired and exact this kind of punitive measure against somebody who, by all accounts, did not exhibit that behavior in the future and had worked to rectify it.
Yes.
Is really troubling. For the most part, I think you could argue that on the left, it is at least... So it is at least born of a desire to improve the discourse
and the
acceptability of certain people, certain marginalized groups, and diminishing hate speech. Whereas with Cernovich and people on the alt-right, they take those same principles and act on them in bad faith.
Yes. Yes. He has the alt-right down. Not the right, But I don't think there's a difference in his head, probably, from the alt-right and the right. He has the alt-right down. They are trying to cause chaos. He has the first part down, the reason why it was so bad. Yes. The idea that the left is only doing this for the good. I mean, they're trying to. I mean, sometimes they make a mistake, but really explain Media Matters.
The whole organization built on millions of dollars of donations specifically designed to attack their political opponents with out of context material from their past. That is the entire mission statement of that organization.
And they take that as fact and they spread it and they cheer.
They cheer them from the sidelines. They treat them with actual respect. They take their research seriously.
There is no difference between Media Matters and Cernovich. None.
No.
Except for one is really well financed.
Yeah, and the other was just a guy.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. There's absolutely no... He just learned the lessons. Media Matter made the road. They cleared the forest. Mm-hmm. They made the road. They flattened it out. They paved it. And
they built houses.
They built houses.
Hotels.
On it. There's food stops on the side of the
road.
They
are Park Place and Park Place and Boardwalk.
And then, like, Mike Cernovich drives down at once on his little tricycle, and everyone's gets all upset.
Yeah.
Oh, how dare he go down it on his tricycle? It's like, I got it. I mean, I don't like what he does either. Okay, but I mean, let's not be... You guys, this is your creation, your world.
So I just had tweeted my support yesterday for Chris Pratt and James Gunn, again, mm-hmm. and getting hammered for it, when this appears in my Twitter feed. And I'm beside myself. And it makes me want to remove my name from support, okay? And that is a logical feeling, okay? However, I just want to say this. Then it becomes about them and not about you. You cannot change. The world may change. The world may go over a cliff. You must not go over the cliff. You know what's right. You know what's wrong. Do what you know is right. No matter what the rest of the world does. And I will tell you, there is no one that is going to listen. No one's going to have their mind change if we treat them the way they have treated us. They're not going to change their mind. It will validate in their minds that we are those people. The only thing that will change people's minds is if we rally to those who have been wronged in any way, even if we vehemently disagree with them and we can't support what they said, to say this is wrong. Now, people say, Glenn Beck, you were for Roseanne's firing. No, I wasn't. I said to you, I don't like the fact that we're going down this road. Nuance. If I am the CEO of ABC, I probably fire her because nothing can hurt the mouse. Nothing can hurt the shareholder value. So I wouldn't have hired her in the first place. And the same thing with James Gunn. If I am Disney and I got a guy who now the internet has labeled a pedophile, sure, would I like to stand up for his rights? But nothing can hurt the mouse. They're a business. Does that make it right?
But if you think last week was the first they'd ever heard of those tweets, you're pretty naive.
Of course.
They hired the guy, what, 2000? When was the first Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't know.
2013, 14? Yeah.
Yeah. 2012 is when
he'd already apologized for it in 2012.
Publicly, in interviews.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they knew about it.
Right.
And they hired him anyway.
But it wasn't a big deal at that time.
Right.
And the difference also between Roseanne, and I am not for, I'm not for the firing of anyone on a Twitter, on a tweet, especially if it's taken out of context. Now, with Roseanne has a long history. She called for the execution of bankers, the beheading of bankers. And it was not a joke. She was running for president.
Actual policy proposal.
It was policy. So she is out of her mind crazy. Now, I certainly didn't throw up my arms and say, oh, my gosh, what a tragedy. Because, and this is probably wrong of me, because she is somebody who is so wildly dangerous to the right, and she was convincing everybody that that's who the right is. She's not the right. If anything, she's alt-right. Nobody who calls for socialism and the beheading of bankers should be considered a conservative or a Donald Trump supporter or anything like us.
That's just left.
That's just crazy.
You're just left wing.
Well, and if you look at the alt-right's actual philosophy, you find that they support almost all the big government left-wing policies.
Oh my gosh.
But, you guys have universal health care and all of those things.
You have to see Dinesh D'Souza's movie. His new movie.
Oh, yeah. Want to.
It's coming out.
It is absolutely fantastic. There's one part where he goes in and he says, so I wanted to find out what the alt-right was, because everybody is saying that it's conservative, but it's not. They are for all of the things that the right stands against. So he goes to Richard Spencer and he does a sit-down interview with him and he says, so tell me about the Bill of Rights. And Spencer's like, you don't have any rights. Rights come from government.
Okay. What? What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Tell me about socialism. Socialism, I think, is good. I mean,
that's worse than I thought it was.
Boom, 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 boom.
Jeez.
And it just takes apart the idea that this is the conservative movement. It's not a conservative movement, period. It's not. It's just finding a home there because we were so beaten up and we wanted a bully on our side, I guess. Well, they're not part of us, and they shouldn't be part of us. And we have to do everything we can to separate ourselves from them. And by defending people like Cernovich does not help us. It doesn't help us. There was something on The View that was remarkably the same.
It's the same thing. I mean, I agree with this clip. This is Leslie Jones. Leslie Jones is the
comedian. She was the one on Ghostbusters.
And if you remember, again, another guy I have no taste for, Milo Yiannopoulos, who was on Twitter and got kicked off of Twitter because he had people going after her.
Right.
So that's kind of how you might remember her. But this is this.
And she was very upset about that.
Very upset about it. Mm-hmm. And she quit Twitter at least for a while.
Right.
He wound up getting kicked off of it because of this incident. But so this is her now talking about jokes and living your life not addicted to outrage. Listen.
Let comedians do their job, because let me explain something to you. You're not letting comedians do their job, and you're miserable. You're miserable. Because laughter is a release, just like watching acting, just like listening to music, just like looking at art. Laughter is a release that you are now cutting off. Stop walking around so offended. You're not going to be able to survive life if you walk around offended.
So now here's the problem with this. She is only seeing the job of a comedian. This is what happens to all of us.
Yep.
We only see it from our side of the pond. Well, I'm a comedian. You can't shut me down. Well, no. Yes, I agree. But that's called freedom of speech. And you shouldn't be so offended when somebody says something about you. You just have to move on. We have to take personal responsibility and have thicker skin.
Yeah, that's a problem. First time anybody says anything about her, she's going to be out of her mind, pissed.
Oh, yeah, of course.
She was.
She was already. The good thing, though, is Loyola Marymount is hosting an event that's going to help all of us.
Oh.
It's going to help people decipher the alphabet soup of sexual orientation and gender identities. Now, keep in mind, this Loyola Marymount is a
Catholic
university. According to the flyer on the event, on the university's website, the September 14th seminar will closely examine the ever-expanding LGBTQ community because the acronym seems to be getting longer every day.
No, you forgot I.
There was LGBT.
Yeah.
LGBTQ.
Uh-huh.
LGBTQQIA. LGBTQQIA2. Now... there's just quilt bags.
Quilt bags.
I guess that's the new term.
Quilt bags.
Quilt bags.
Instead of LGBTQ,
IQQIA2,
quilt bags.
Quilt bags.
Okay.
Quilt bag means?
Now, quilt bag is an acronym to replace LGBTQQ2IA.
Okay.
The Q is for queer and questioning. So they're kind of cheating there a little bit
because right.
they're not using a silent Q there.
They should use a
they
silent
should.
Q because
be
QQ. You're demeaning one Q.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The U is for unidentified. The I...
Oh, unidentified.
Unidentified.
As in flying objects.
As in flying objects in the bedroom.
What is... What
I think...
Can you help me at all with unidentified? My sexuality is unidentified.
I'm just really not sure who you want to sleep with at any given time.
Okay. So this does have something to do with sex.
Oh, yeah.
Not gender identity.
Right. Not just gender
no,
identity.
No, not just gender
identity.
But it
identity. Is both.
Okay. All right.
Then there's intersex for the I.
And intersex means?
That you are both sexes.
Okay. All right. Okay.
The L, lesbian, fairly self-explanatory.
Uh-huh. T,
transgender, transsexual again.
Right. Yeah.
The B, bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
The A, asexual.
Mm-hmm.
And the G, again, cheating a bit, gay and genderqueer. Using
you double, you double up there.
Doubled up.
Now, what is genderqueer?
I mean, I'm trying to find unidentified still. You're wondering.
I'd like to know what genderqueer is and unidentified.
Because I think, and you know, we occasionally will mock the idea mm-hmm. a little bit of, you know, all of these letters being added and how we all have to have our own little group that has only
because it has really grown
in.
Quite
right.
a bit.
Well,
it,
when
it
you can form, even... when you can form a word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. But I think here...
In fact, in this case, a compound
yeah.
word.
Uh-huh. Here, though, I think this is a legitimate improvement. Like, quilt bag is legitimately
that's
better
a good
than LGBTQI2A yeah. or whatever
like,
it yeah. is.
It's yeah. a, it's a like good development because you can say it much easier.
Now, yeah. it's not an insult, is it? Because it feels like an insult.
It's That's but what it's we not were saying. Yeah. It sounds like
well,
an insult, but it's
not
according to this seminar.
It's actually pronounceable.
So here's the conundrum. It was put together, apparently, by a religious group. But it was a religious group at a university.
Right.
So
that makes it okay.
I think it's okay.
The university disqualifies the religious group.
I think
I
so.
I think it does.
I think so. Or cancels it out so it's nothing.
Right.
Genderqueer.
Okay.
Is most commonly used to describe a person who feels that his or her gender identity does not fit into the socially constructed norms associated with his or her biological sex.
Wait, isn't that everything else in quilt bag?
I feel like you, right? Like, if you're unidentified, you haven't identified mm-hmm. what your thing
Look
is.
Look up unidentified.
Mm-hmm. I can't find it.
What do you mean you can't find it? It's the you in quilt bag.
I know. I'll have to get back to you on this. I think we're...
Okay, well...
You said that as if it was so obvious. It's the U.
Right, it's
quilt
the U
bag.
Quilt bag.
Come on.
Look how it rolls off your tongue.
Yeah, it does.
Right.
I mean, it's like it's so much better than LGBTQI2A. Well, you did think, though, the 2 is not in quilt bag. So we have to make it quilt bag 2 electric boogaloo. And then you can add a lot of other letters.
I think that's a movie.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Thank you, Pat Gray and his orchestra and the Singing Cowboys. It's Tuesday. Back with Pat Gray coming up at... the top of next hour on the Blaze Radio Network immediately following this program.
By the way, I'm seeing undecided as well as an alternative to unidentified.
Two U's?
There could be two U's.
There's
there.
Lots of silent letters in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Once again, sensitive personal data has been exposed in a data breach. For nearly 2 months, an unauthorized party reportedly stole usernames, passwords to log in on into online accounts. But it's really, I mean, it's not a problem. It was only just major department store websites. So, I mean, who uses those? Customer data such as full names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, birthday, payment, card numbers, expiration dates, all of it compromised. Did you even know about this? With your personal information from a data breach, criminals can now get into absolutely every aspect of your life. That's why you need LifeLock. I want you to go to LifeLock.com and use the promo code Beck. LifeLock has their new identity theft protection with Norton Security. Now, nobody can, you know, stop all trans or follow all transactions at all businesses, you know, but they can. They can find the threats that you might otherwise miss. So LifeLock.com with Norton Security, they got you on both sides now, and they're working for you 24/7. Just got a warning from LifeLock. Somebody has opened up 3 different accounts in my wife's name.
Oh, congratulations.
You know the great
New
thing
members
is?
Of the family.
Yeah. You know the great thing is?
What?
Don't have to worry about it.
All blocked.
All blocked, all taken care of, nice. All done by LifeLock. 1-800-LifeLock. 1-800-LifeLock. Use the promo code Beck. Get an extra 10% off your first year. It's promo code Beck at LifeLock.com. So, you know, some people would say socialism always ends up, you know, going too far. You know, death camps, you know, riots, starvation, etc. No, Bloomberg says that some of these experiments haven't just gone far enough.
I think that's what always happens, Glenn. Socialism would work if just people would just implement it correctly.
It's
a perfect
system,
but they never go far enough. And that's why Finland's basic income test wasn't ambitious enough is the headline.
Okay.
We'll get into that tomorrow. But I mean, the bottom line is it was encouraging people to work.
Oh, well, you can't give them free money and encourage them to work.
No, the whole point is they can stay home.
Oh, my gosh.
Jeez.
That's so easy. Thank goodness Bloomberg is here to help us out. That's tomorrow on the broadcast.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.